The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy.
On this episode of Pennies Going In Raw, we talk about where the line is between conviction and risk management. We also discuss older generations learning to trade and external things and programs to have while trading.
Find out life's this game of pennies.
Oh, you guys know we only have a 40% runner. Hello? 40% right is a f***ing killing.
We've been compliant for too long. It's time we go to war.
I don't have a Roth.
Q knows so much about the market that his brain doesn't have enough room for grammar.
Hey, who told me about IDEX? It's going up a shit ton now.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
You asked the exact same question with two words different.
It's like, f*** man, I just got dick whipped for like 20%, and now that f***er's up like 50.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
I'm just making this voice memo to call out unusual whales to a fight.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Pennies.
Going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity of Dips,
and Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny
and Christian.
Let's go, baby.
Hey guys, we are on a break right now. We are, you know, traveling or in Reno. We will be back around the 9th of September. However, we still recorded a podcast for you. Make sure to like us and give us a 5-star rating on Apple. Enjoy. Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going In Raw. Today is whatever date this release is on. And I think we can kind of, you know, look, guys, you know, we're on a little trip right now. I'm moving. Hugh is, you know, in Egypt. And you know, we may be in Reno right now, depending on when we release this. But we don't have anything about what's happening this week in the market because we don't know what week it is. However, we do want to talk about, you know, risk management. You got to have that, but you also want to have conviction. So where is the line between holding and holding forever and diamond hands, and then, you know, managing your trade with your plan? Because I mean, there's got to be a line somewhere.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, there has to be a line. I can definitely say I've gotten lucky a few times, because, you know, I mean, I used to swing for the fences on every single trade, and I still think it's okay to swing for the fences. Like, if you truly believe in the company and you can back that shit up with DD and, like, you know, I mean, and you know your risk, I think there's also a difference between, like, I've been holding Vissel down, like, I'm down like 36% on Vissel. When I entered the position for a long term a year and a half ago, which is fucking insane, it's not even small, it's not even short-term capital gains now, if I was green on it. And so when I had entered that, I usually lay out a pretty big plan. And part of that plan is, okay, where is the line in the sand for me? And for me and Vissel, that was this earnings report that came out in August. Now, obviously, as Dan said, I'm in Egypt, or we're in Reno, who knows? But you know, that's what I usually lay inside the sand, is that, okay, if they can't, I'm playing this because I believe that they're undervalued. I believe that they can really make a splash inside the technology field, you know, things like that. But if they can't make a splash and they can't improve by this, okay, so for instance, earnings report, then I'm going to cut it. So, you know, when we're recording this, the earnings report is now, but if Vissel doesn't lower their operating expense, increase revenue, increase profit margins, then I'm going to be done with it. And it's not because I don't believe that Vissel can't be a good company. It's because I'm not sitting here for another year and a half, just like, if I lose another 30%, you know, it's not even about the money. It's about that line in the sand of saying, okay, this is too much. This is too much conviction.
What about on some of these growth companies where you're not exactly waiting for a catalyst? You know, you
you don't want to be down 50% or whatever. Is that just something you more so have to take into account with your entry price?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it all comes down to what's your personal risk appetite. You know, like I know some guys who can, they'll hold something down 99%. They don't even care because they still believe in that shit. And then there's other people who, you know, it goes 3% against them and they're, you know, shaking. And, but I mean, all that comes down to, again, is that even if you're not a super risk adverse person, you're like a cowboy, you know, the one bad thing about us who like to take bigger risks is that, you know, if we nibble too much and it goes down farther and then we nibble more onto a position, it goes down farther, you know, then we got our hand in a headlock. And, you know, it's one of those things where I just think that you really have to, it's all about saving your bullets, you know, not getting too big, because you can have conviction, but if 80% of your portfolio is locked up inside this thing, you know, you're kind of tying your hands.
Yeah, I've actually been trying to find out if cowboy was the riskiest profession you could have chosen there, but I mean, I guess they are a pretty risky profession. But yeah, no, I mean, obviously, if you're going to have that much in, for sure. But I guess going back to conviction and risk management as a whole, like, what is your thing for, you know, if this swing gets here, I'm done with it, as opposed to just this catalyst wasn't exactly what I was expecting, or they had bad news that I wasn't expecting?
Yeah. So if they're like, let's take, so we all know that, like, if there's a bad catalyst, then I'll get out. But let's say if there's not a bad catalyst, I'm just holding a bag. Because, I mean, that happens, you know, especially inside a market like this where it's lower volatility, you know, and you're just feeling that downward pressure. You know, I think there's two things. One, if part of the reason that I'm inside the stock is because I feel the chart is set up, you know, like, and the chart fails and it goes down, then, you know, I mean, that's one thing. But let's just say that I'm purely holding it for a catalyst, then, you know, I think for me, it's more about like the mental state that I'm in. Because I know that, like, if I'm down on trades, I start to really let it affect me. It won't affect me. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'll be like, I'll be pissed at the world, you know, and that's just because my swing is down, and that's not right. So it's really one of those things where, like, okay, if I'm down 30% and I really know inside the back of my mind that this thing, you know, isn't going to come anytime soon, or like, this is just like my ego is bruised or something, then, you know, just to get a good night's sleep and just to get some peace of mind, then that's when I feel like I have to cut it.
All right. Well, I know you mentioned the slower market kind of right now and volatility and everything. Do you kind of like go over price action in a slower market as opposed to a hot market? Because, I mean, we're seeing it kind of right now, how it just feels like good news isn't just giving us any action, or not as much as it should. We're not seeing those pre-market runners at all, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, no. I mean, price action is definitely, in my opinion, well, I don't want to say it's more important inside a more volatility market, but it's definitely easier to identify patterns. And I think we talked about a few episodes ago when you see that massive share exchange, you know, inside the price action stuff. I mean, that's like a pretty good telltale sign of like when the stock, you know, is going to make a move. You know, one way or the other, is when you see that massive share exchange. When we see a lower volatility market like this, the price action is harder to tell, because you really can't tell, you know, like, it's telling you, hey, this is a pretty high volume day for it. But, you know, if you go back 5 months ago inside a hot market, you know, that was like the average day of volatility. So the data really gets skewed, like the average volume and stuff really gets skewed. So it's one of those things where, like, inside a slower market, you know, you got to take, the way that I look at it is like, price action is super important for the ones that are like the higher runners. But on, like, you know, like most of the time the swings, it's more like, what the fuck? Like this thing's just not moving because there's no volume. Like, you know, like someone sells into the bid, it goes down 10%, you know, like that. It's one of those things where, you know, there's just not a lot of volume out there. So, you know, I mean, if we sold 10,000 shares into the bid, 6 months ago, you know, it would drop a penny. Now it's dropping five or six. So it's one of those things where, you know, you really have to be aware. And that's what I mean, is that, you know, if you're a trader that's also working full time, then, like, you know, it's tough because if you have a stop loss out there and someone just market sells like a pretty big, you know, pretty big amount, you know, you can, that can hit your stop loss and, you know, it might have wicked right back up instantly. But again, that lower volatility just brings it down further. The best case scenario that we always talk about is that Christmas Eve of 2018 or whatever, you know, the market was down a few percent simply because there was no bids out there. So I think that's one of those things where like, you have to be really aware and it comes down to where, you know, maybe that systematic strategy changes inside a slower market and you kind of have to like, you know, be aware and you have to be cognitively, you know, into your stocks and stalking them.
Why does it seem like with lower volume moves, is it always the downside? Why don't stocks move up the same way they move downwards on quote low volume moves?
I think it's like, it's the same way that, you know, why does it always that when you get a girlfriend, girls start hitting on you, you know, that's kind of what how I feel like this is that, you know, when, sorry, I forgot where I was going with that, but I think where I was going with that was that, you know, it's just how it is, you know, like we notice the downside, you know, much faster than we'll notice the upside. So, you know, if my stock opens up 6%, I'm like sick, you know, because that's what we want it to do. But when it goes down 6%, I'm like, holy shit, you know, I mean, I'm like looking at the fucking computer, you know, like trying to analyze, you know, is there something that somebody knows that I don't analyze? Okay. What did I say?
I thought you said analyze.
No. And so I'm sitting there, you know, like, oh shit, like what's going on here? Like 6%. But when it's up 6%, I'm like, yeah, what's up, bitches? And I'm just letting it go, you know, like I'm not even thinking twice about it. But when we see it on the downside, we're thinking about it constantly because that's not what we want it to do.
It's funny that you mentioned it being up 6%. So you're not thinking about it. If it's up 6%, I'm starting to sell a little bit.
Not me, bro. I'm a cowboy. Remember? Yeehaw. I'm going for the home run. Going for the home run. I'm there for the bag.
Okay. Well, fair enough. So in price action in the hotter market, why does it seem like is the hotter market? Does that just mean we got volume now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, volume precedes price action. So the way that like, I mean, there's things that people can say, but hey, an FDA approval inside the market that we're in right now in August moves 15-20%, probably ends the day right. In January, that bitch would have gone like 500%, you know, on the same thing. So, and that's because of volume. And I mean, you know, you could say what you want. Like, I know that like when I talk about this, like not everybody likes that and that's okay. But, you know, algos really run the market. Like they are most of the volume. Like you can see it right now. Okay. There's no algos out there and stocks are getting killed. And that's why, like, you know, when people talk about it, you know, like, when people talk about it, like, hey, like, you know, if we all just bought this stock, like AMC was controlled by algorithms. Like there was hedge funds backing that, making AMC go crazy. Like that wasn't me, you and my frat buddies buying $5 worth, making this thing go. Like there was real volume behind that, real money behind that. And so, you know, when we look at like the small cap market right now, okay, yes, retail trading is huge compared to what it was 5 years ago. Hell, what it was compared to a year ago. But that still doesn't even come close to the amount of volume that the algorithms bring into the market. And so when they're gone, like now, you see what happens, you know? And the bigger part of the story is that we're so emotional as traders. So what ends up happening is that stocks go red. Okay, people get emotional, they'll buy some more, buy the dip. It goes down a little bit more, and now they're panic selling. So now, you know, you have all these people who are underneath water on these stocks, now panic selling, creating a bigger sell-off. Like SPY was green, you know, I'll see SPY red, like not even 0.5%, and small cap world is down like 10 across the board. And that's because people get so worried that like, that, you know, we're any red day from SPY is going to turn into, you know, like a bear market, that they're just selling anything and everything. And so that's another thing that goes to show when algorithms aren't there and you have this emotional selling and there's no algo to pick it up, you know, look what happens. You know, small caps get killed. I mean, there's stuff like TBLT was trading at almost $2 back to 50 cents. You know, like WTRH was trading at $5 back down to almost $1. You know, and that's and it doesn't take much for that to happen. You turn the algos off, you have a little bit of emotional selling. Like, could you imagine if SPY wasn't ripping? Like, SPY's been ripping for months, a year. SPY has been ripping for a year. And I mean, you still have people that are super worried. Like, relax, you know? We need the algorithms.
It's weird that, you know, you mentioned how the small caps go down so much with SPY just down a little bit, when it used to seem like SPY would work in inverse with small caps. SPY goes down, small caps go up. Why does that relationship seem to alter so much from inverse to just running with it?
Well, so everything in finance until last year was rather, how do I say this? Everything. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of dry, like, you know, like you went through market cycles and the market cycles were the same for decades. You know, like everybody went to the Hamptons the same week, you know, everybody's kids went to the school the same, you know, the same school, you know, shit like that. And then all of a sudden COVID happened and all these retailers came and like, yeah, it screwed everything up for all the finance people and all the market cycles and everything. So what used to happen is it used to be one of those things where like, hey, SPY's down. Let's stop screwing with SPY. Let's go to small caps. And then all these hedge fund managers, bless you, all these hedge fund managers that would usually be trading, you know, large caps and stuff, you know, came to the small cap side. And so small caps would get bid up because there was tons of volume and new money coming in and, you know, supply and demand comes down to it. And then, you know, all this retail trading came out of nowhere and you had stuff like people buying $10 million worth of Tesla options that are 1,000% out of the money with like 6 months to go. And that was like squeezing the stock. Like some retail swinging dick with like 3 million was able to affect Tesla. And it was like, holy, it's like these fund managers now like, well, who the hell's doing that? Like, is that you? And they're like looking around the table like, well, that's not me. Is that you? And it brought this whole new opportunity for everybody. But in that also bought a world where, you know, where the market cycles were messed up. Hedge fund managers weren't having to flee to small caps because Tesla was ripping 5 to 6% a day, in either direction. And so I really think that that's one of the reasons that, you know, it's so weird for, and I mean, even me, like I've been here 8.5 years and it's even weird for me, to really see like when August was hot for the first week or something, I was like, what the hell last year? You know, like I was like, what the hell is this? Like usually I'm losing my pants. And so I think that like for the guys that have been inside this game for like 30, 40 years, they like really had no idea what to do. They were like, what the fuck do we do now? Like, have you ever been inside a market like this? No. Have you? No. And so I think that that's really part of it, is that the game has just been changing so much away from what everybody was so used to inside the finance industry, that like everybody was kind of like, okay, like I guess we'll trade Tesla today. Like there's enough volume there, you know? And it was like things like that. So that's what I really think is like why we're seeing kind of like this sporadic movements and inverses, where 1 week it'll be together, 1 week it won't be. That's because like there's like, you know, there's people with a few million dollars that are able to, you know, kind of change momentum in stocks like Tesla.
All right, well, moving on to our next segment, which is programs and shit we have on our desk. do you want to start with shit you have on your desk or programs?
Programs.
All right, programs. I think we can start with the easier ones, with like trade ideas, scans, Benzinga Charlie, Discord, Twitter. Obviously your trading app.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking around. I have up TweetDeck, Discord, two other chat rooms, trade ideas, and scans. And then I also have on Zoom, but that, you know, that was for a different thing. And then I also have up my Roth IRA, you know, checking that at all times. And that's it. And
do you come on TD go account. Over a little quickie on scans and trade ideas to some of the newer people?
Yeah. So trade ideas, the way that I coded my trade ideas is that there's basically five different sections for trade ideas that I have: top gainers, top losers, and then it's based on volume. So then I have another one that's just based on volume. And then I have the momentum scanner. And what that does is that it filters everything, but like all stocks on the trade on the New York Stock Exchange and the NAS. And so it'll basically tell me when they're moving up in high volume, you know, high relative volume, you know, when they're moving inside a sector. So if an entire sector is starting to get bid up, stuff like that. And I don't really pay much attention to that. The one that I started to pay attention to is that when it comes over to, you know, like when it's come up on that scan a certain amount of times, then it gets moved over to the other one. And that other one is a little more detailed and did... that one's a little bit more detailed. And then that's when I start to pay attention to it because, you know, now it's like, okay, this has been happening multiple times. And then on top of that, I also have a dip buy scanner. And that's basically like, hey, this thing has super unusual volume. It went up 150%. Now it's down, you know, now it's only up 70%. You know, this might be good for like a quick little pop. That's pretty much how I use trade ideas. And that's pretty much how I use trade ideas.
Now, I know you have a lot of monitors. Obviously, you don't need four or five. You don't even need two. I think two is, you know, about all you need, especially as a anywhere before you get to expert trader. Mainly, I just have the broker directly in front of me on the main one on a 34-inch widescreen. And then on the other one, I just have the trade ideas. And then I also have scans on the main one, too, just to the side. And then just anything else.
So you don't
like
even
this.
Use Thinkorswim, right?
No, I just use TD Ameritrade. The
that's crazy.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's mind-blowing to me.
I mean, you can still assign it to a Stream Deck, which was gonna go on my shit I have on my desk. And Stream Deck is just like we did a giveaway on one, but it basically turns trading into a video game. You can have like buy 10,000 shares, sell 10,000 shares, and you can just bow, 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 bow as fast as you want. So,
oh, how do you know what stock it is?
You type it in. Or it's like, oh. This is just for like day trading. I'm really fast.
So you
fun.
Can become an algorithm, basically.
You
like buy one share, sell one share.
Yeah, it's more like you become a gambler at Las Vegas on the craps table.
Oh, dude, they always win.
Yeah, no, you become really, really good. But on your desk, do you have anything that, you know, you'd recommend that's different? Like, obviously, you have your sticky notes for...
Yeah, you know. I do. Wait, actually, let me see what this is, because this might be important. Oh, my Roth conversion form for this year. So, you know, that is important. But no, really pretty much on my desk, you know, it's just a bunch of sticky notes. And, you know, I mean, I have, if you guys are watching on YouTube, it's, you know, I have like just, I mean, this is what it looks like. I mean, it's just post-it notes on papers and stuff and me just writing, honestly, nonsense, you know, but it's kind of like shorthand because most of the time I'm looking around at everything that I don't want to, you know, lift my head, up, you know, or down, I should say. I don't want to look down too much. So it's more like I just scribbled myself to remind myself to do other things, because one of the biggest issues that I usually have is that when I focus on, trading so much, I forget to do anything else. I completely forget to do anything and everything else. So, you know, like when I used to be at home with my parents, I would they would tell me like, you know, make sure that you get the meat out of the freezer and by like 3 p.m. And I would totally forget. And then they would come home at 6 p.m. and, you know, there would be no thawed meat. So that's pretty much why I use it. And then it'll also be like things to check up on. So like if let's just call it like Mr. 4-8 on Twitter sends me a DM like, hey bro, check out this SPAC, you know, and obviously like in that moment of time, you know, I'll scribble on here because of the amount of DMs that we get, you know, I'm never going to remember. So that's pretty much why I use sticky notes. And then it's just like constant reminders, like it's literally like little stuff like, hey dumbass, like stop oversizing, you know, like little notes to myself, little love letters.
It's so weird that as traders who are always on our computers, we still prefer like sticky notes as opposed to just, you know, the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have cabinets full. Like I can't even open up some of the drawers inside my cabinets. That's how bad it is.
Yeah, so mainly just a clean table. I say clean, so take that with a grain of salt. I also have like next level hydrogen water on here too. Just as a reminder that any stock can do anything. I guess adding our last segment before we just have a little chitter chatter will be, you know, for the older generation. Someone asked that, you know, some tips for the older generation. They're still kind of learning tech too. And they want some stuff to kind of, I don't know if they meant like learning experience or money and stocks to leave to their grandkids, which is a good question. You know, we do have a large demographic of mainly males. However, we do get up there in age. So I think one of the cooler things about trading is, you know, especially if it's with your grandkids, is that they probably understand technology and you'll probably get them into investing and you guys can kind of learn together. You can kind of teach them the basics of trading while they kind of teach you, you know, more about the tech.
How to turn on the computer. Yeah. Yeah, I think this reminds me of a story of a mother's son who they weren't really ever close. And we received the DM last year. And she had said, hey, guys, like, listen, I haven't made a dollar trading. But what this has been able to do for my son and I, like we haven't been able to talk about it, the same subject in years. And now we're both just so, you know, ingrained in trading and we just love it so much. And we get to talk about it and it's constant content. Like, thank you. And I mean, so that's what like I kind of think of, is that like part of like what is so cool about this is that, you know, it, obviously you have to like it, but it's not one of those things where like, it's not one of those things where it's like hair and makeup. Like you can like hair and makeup, and I like sports, and we both like trading. And I think that that's so cool. So from that perspective, you know, first off, if you're older and, you know, technology doesn't come as easy, you know, take it really slow. Like most of these, like Thinkorswim and most of these platforms are really easy to get overwhelmed by for even, you know, like a younger person that knows about technology. So if you already are at a disadvantage inside that game, take it super slow. Every single platform has people and has webinars that'll show you how to you know, set certain things up and like where like the most important buttons are. And so take full advantage of those. You know, TD Ameritrade, you know, Fidelity, all of them. You know, like when you sign up with TD Ameritrade, and you probably ignore the phone call, but somebody calls from your local branch and asks you if you need help setting anything up, okay? 99% of us just say, no, like, go fuck yourself, you know, whatever. But use those people because they're there to help. And then the other thing is that, as Dan was saying, is like, you know, hey, like, you can always ask somebody. There's tons of YouTube videos, you know, if you can figure out YouTube, you can figure out trading. Cause you know, it's one of those things where like, hey, how do I, you know, like look up the basics of Thinkorswim, things like that. I think from that perspective, like, you know, just taking things slow. Like if we usually tell you like, hey, you know, paper trade for 6 months, you know, then maybe just spend 6 months learning the broker.
Yeah. And learning. And there's also easier ways for each of them. I think like I was talking about earlier, I think the browser version is easier than the apps for all of them. TDAmeritrade.com, Webull.com, and you know, and Robinhood. I think if you have trouble with technology at all, I think Robinhood's your best bet. Especially, that's also what I recommend anyone that's new to trading, that's not going to be trading a lot, to get into, just because it's so. And yeah, I get it. Fuck Robinhood, delete Robinhood. But the thing is, it makes it so obvious what's happening, what's going on, why your money's up, what you lost. It's the best for sure.
Yeah. And then just touching on the part that says they want to leave something for their children, grandchildren. This goes into more the personal finance side of it. But you know, things like that, if you want to leave people something and, you know, you want your estate to be, you know, pretty, you know, like you want your estate to, you know, look nice, you know, something like that. The biggest way that you can help out your beneficiaries is, one, having a detailed will, and two, tax planning. okay? You can have $10 million. But here's the thing is that the difference between doing a few things can be the difference of millions. Okay. So my best advice to give to you, no matter if you have $5 or 50 million, is to find a really good estate planner and someone that can help you, because that really is going to be the difference. Oh, the difference of opening up a certain account can be the difference of like 30% to the government or not. So I think that, like, you know, like, I understand the part about wanting to make money to leave to people, but I'm telling you, even if you become a pro trader, it doesn't matter if 50% goes to the government, okay? You can do things that will save you inside the long run and will save headaches and will save money to your beneficiary. So just a PSA, if you're, you know, that's so important, I think. And then from the trading side of things, if, you know, if you're older, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you probably, again, like I said, need to take things slower.
You probably got all the fucking time in the world if we're being for real.
Yeah. 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 And the thing is that,
well,
like,
not all the time in the world, all the time in the day. Not all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah. 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 Your responsibilities. Yeah. And so I think it's one of those things where you really need to take things slow, but also, you know, have fun with it. You know, like again, start slow, you know, with beer money, you know, same thing, start slow with beer money and just work your way up, learn, read.
Like diabetes, okay. Medicine money.
Yeah. And so it's the same thing, like we tell everybody else, you know, like nobody's born a great trader. So if you're older, don't think that you can't do it. It's the same thing, like when you see people going back to college, you know, like it's a fantastic thing. Anybody can go back to college. Anybody can learn how to trade. You just got to take it slow and don't get overwhelmed. Same thing, like don't get overwhelmed trading. Don't get overwhelmed with the technology. Just take it slow. You know, say that, like, hey, I want to learn how to, you know, log in by 2 months from now.
Yeah.
You know, small, achievable.
This technology is a lot different than your Excel sheets and shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, don't take a fucking computer class to learn how to trade on TD Ameritrade. They're completely different. Like I said, you know, buy Robinhood or download Robinhood and buy a stock, and it's simple as can be. I think my grandmother still, like, calls up Vanguard to do her shit, so... She gets like a thing in the mail, like but she's done a hell of a job investing for herself over the past 60 years.
That's a go grandma dip.
Yeah,
tell you what.
That's how she made all her money. Just is investing.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, she was a
pharmacist. So you do have it in the blood.
I have it.
You got
it
in the blood.
It's not like she'll be like, yeah, come on, like, it'll be steel's a good buy right now. I'll be like, steel. Like, just in general. I'm like, grandma, if we're front loading shit, give me the ticker. Like,
she's like, honey, I got in the backyard.
My grandmother doesn't sound like a fucking hillbilly.
I don't know. I've never had the pleasure to meet Grandma Dip.
No, one in my family sounds like they can't read. They all are like, they're like pretty smart.
Anything south of Delaware, and I just instantly put on a southern accent.
Fucking Delaware? They're like 40 fucking states. Dude, I looked up the average income of where I live right now today. And let me just get it just so I can. And by today, I mean, yes, I looked it up today, but also it's where I live today. It won't be by the time this podcast comes out. okay, median income, 23,400. Household, 38,900. That's what,
I lost that today.
That's like kids and shit.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Actually, now I want to see mine.
Yeah, it's probably a little more. Yeah, no, I don't live in like the nicest of areas by any means. But again, I am moving. I'm leaving all my shit. I'm starting fresh.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
It's, where'd it go? Education, health, economy. What was underneath? A comedy?
Just Google Hoboken.
Oh, median household income for 2019 was $150,000.
Yeah, so like... four times more than us.
But are you getting fresh out the udder milk up there, or are you having to get it from the store?
There, and sometimes it's not even at the store. I mean, maybe I should just park at Callan's at the lawn.
We get it fresh eggs, fresh sisters. Wow. If you're, you know, well, most of them aren't very fresh, but you get the point.
That's fucking disgusting.
What do you mean?
What do you call it? That's crazy. Well, I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, when this comes out, you'll be in Houston.
Five more minutes of the podcast, and we're just like, okay.
Talking about, yeah, grandma dip and southern accents.
Now we're on to incest.
Well, you know, by the time this comes out, you'll be all moved into Houston. You know, I don't know if anyone else got an invite to Dan's housewarming party, but mine still isn't in the mail.
A fucking housewarming party.
So no. We got to have one. I mean, it's going to be like that's where we'll do PGIR Live 2.
It's a one bedroom apartment.
PGIR Live 2, bro. Right in your apartment. What a better place.
We could do it.
Already
on
got the studio.
Rooftop pool.
That would be sick.
Didn't
you say there's some like celebrity that's living there or something, like Tom Brady?
Yeah, it's Tom Brady. No, I don't want to reveal who's gonna live on my floor, because it's like, what if he's like, you know, one of his friends listen, they're like, hey, you're gonna be living here, and they're like, how the fuck do you know that? And then it'd be like, oh, he's giving out who's living on his floor. So maybe my goal is to become his friend. So I'm gonna like be poached,
extort him for the pod
on the floor. Yeah, and I'll become his friend, and whenever I drop a selfie of us two, you know, that's when you'll know that who the neighbor is. Yeah,
Eli Manning moved out of my building 1 year too fucking early. I would be post outside of his apartment, just sitting there, waiting.
No one cooler than Eli. All right, guys. Well, we've loved talking to you guys. On, I hope this drops on a Wednesday, because it's far too short for a Sunday episode. But be sure to leave us a 5-star rating, and a like, and a subscribe, and a retweet, and all that good stuff. And y'all have a blessed day.
Mwah.